and does an excellent job.
Is that designed in such a way, Bill, that it can be built into a cupboard?
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taken to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Today is Friday, August 17th. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Chirag Mahajan. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It is 5.04 p.m. and time for another almost full hour of independent news. Our headlines will cover local news from Metro Vancouver, provincial and federal news from across Canada, as well as news from around the world.
All this plus Simply Science by Sarah Chow and your weekday weather forecast.
Weekend.
Oh, it is the weekend. Weekend weather forecast right here on News 101, your source for independent news. Now it's time for your UBC campus and local headlines.
UBC is considering creating a new school for economic students. If the UBC Senate passes the proposal, the university's current Department of Economics will become the Vancouver School of Economics, VSE, within the Faculty of Arts. This new school aims to increase the visibility of economics within its faculty and at the university. As the department's submission to the UBC Senate states, the VSE aspires to, quote, create a globally recognized brand that will attract students from across Canada and the world to graduate and undergraduate programs, end quote. The VSE will offer majors, combined majors, honors, and minor programs. The new school hopes to offer small class sizes and more seats per course by hiring additional faculty members. As a first step to increase the range of economic programs available to students, the school will offer a new direct entry Bachelor of International Economics, BIE, in collaboration with the Sauder School of Business.
On campus right now is the 2012 Student Union Development Summit, or SUDS, hosted by the UBC Alma Mater Society. Starting last night and running till Sunday, August 19th, the conference features student society executives from across Canada exchanging ideas and best practices for running student societies and bettering the student experience. Student Union Development Summit had a strong history during the 1990s and early 2000s. This year's program features breakout sessions on student engagement and events, governance, student-run businesses, university relations, advocacy strategies, student mental health, fiscal planning, running student services, and incorporating sustainability into student society operations. AMS President Matt Parson, who was largely responsible for the resurrection of the conference, said, quote, by sharing ideas and learning from the successes of other societies, we can all improve the services we provide to our members. SUDS provides a much-needed forum for us to have these conversations, end quote. We will be talking to members of the AMS for a recap of the conference next week.
An international team of scientists, including several University of British Columbia fisheries experts, recently assessed the health of the world's oceans on a country-by-country basis for the first time and created the Ocean Health Index, published yesterday in the journal Nature. The overall score was calculated based on evaluations of the ecological, social, economic, and political conditions of every coastal nation in the world. The scores for individual countries ranged widely, from Sierra Leone with a falling score of 36 to Jarvis Island, an uninhabited, relatively pristine island in the South Pacific, with the highest scores of 86. Canada is among the top performers with a score of 70, while the US received 63 and the UK received 62. Researchers from UBC's Fishery Centre were responsible for measuring the amount of seafood that is sustainably generated by fisheries and marine aquaculture for human consumption. Daniel Pauly, who's a UBC professor at the UBC Fisheries Centre and is a principal investigator with the Sea Around Us project and the study's co-author, says that, quote, "The Ocean Health Index offers an excellent framework to assess if things are getting better or worse in response to our actions. Although Canada did comparatively well, it has so far set aside only 1% of its waters as marine protected areas. We would like to see progress in this area and others," end quote.
Executive positions at ICBC are being cut after a scathing government review released on Thursday revealed a 315% increase among top brass earning over $200,000 within the past 5 years. The insurer is expected to cut approximately 135 management positions by 2014, and work has begun on implementing 24 government recommendations, many revolving around spending and providing better documentation. It has also implemented a company-wide hiring freeze, as well as a wage freeze for management. John Schubert, the CEO at ICBC, will also step down on November 15th, but will stay on as a paid consultant through June of 2013. Schubert wrote in a company-wide memo that, quote, "This is a mutual decision reached with the board. I am committed to working towards an orderly transition to ensure that ICBC continues to fulfill its mandate," end quote. Finance Minister Kevin Falcon said the Crown Corporation increased management staffing and compensation during the recent recession years when other government arms were tightening their purse strings. In a statement, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, Jordan Bateman, said the Crown Corporation's driving insurance, quote, "monopoly simply isn't working." Bateman said, quote, "Government monopolies like ICBC need to be constantly monitored by politicians. Better yet, get taxpayers out of the insurance business altogether," end quote.
A group of RCMP members, past and present, has launched a website blog to expose more stories of internal corruption and misconduct and to express their cynicism over Commissioner Bob Paulson's efforts to clean the force up. However, the Resurgence Alliance blog, claiming to represent more than 500 members in the RCMP's East Division in BC, was taken down Thursday. Psychologist Mike Webster, who has been in contact with Alliance members, said, quote, "My understanding is the blog will go up and come down. They're concerned with their own security, with their own safety, and they're afraid of their employer," end quote. Webster, who has provided counseling services for RCMP officers, recently blacklisted by the force for his ongoing criticism of the organization. In an open letter originally posted to the blog, the Alliance acknowledged, quote, "absolute corruption at the most disturbing levels," end quote, while questioning the new commissioner's abilities to repair the force as his managers, quote, "pay lip service to him, yet behind his back continue to resist any changes in thought or actions," end quote. The Alliance is not an organized group with a list of members, Webster said, but rather a loose group of individuals and, quote-unquote, cells, who will contribute stories of corruption within the force without knowing the identities of the contributors.
Vancouver City Councillor Kerry Jiang has recently discussed the possibility of working together on a bylaw that would ban the sale and trade of shark fin in the cities of Vancouver, Burnaby, and Richmond. He said he would introduce a motion in the Vancouver City Council in September asking city staff to work with Burnaby and Richmond staff on how they can remove the Chinese delicacy from restaurant menus. On Wednesday, Councillor Jiang said, quote, "We felt that the best way to go forward was to create a ban that would happen simultaneously in all three cities. If only one city banned it, then people could just cross the bridge and go to the next city and vice versa," end quote. Jiang said the consumption of shark fin in Vancouver has dropped considerably over the years within the Chinese community because of changing attitudes. Mayor Gregor Robertson said there has been no action from the federal and provincial governments to implement a ban that would ensure sharks don't go extinct.
The 24th Annual Vancouver Queer Film Festival is running August 16th to 26th, 2012. This year, the festival, titled Films for Lovers and Fighters, brings a combination of 75 films from 16 countries focusing on both the heartstrings and on human rights and activism in Vancouver and around the globe. Some expected highlights are Vancouver competitive drag ball film Leave It on the Floor and Spotlight director Jean Crépeau's film Montreal Girl, as well as emerging queer voices from places like Ecuador, Indonesia, Taiwan, Sri Lanka, Argentina, Japan, Brazil, South Africa, Hong Kong, and Israel. And those are your UBC campus and local headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick break, but stay tuned to us for local weather forecast, as well as your provincial and national headlines.
The world's most shocking monster.
That techno rock you guys listen to is godless.
I'm sure.
And the only reason you don't understand our music is that you don't like it.
After I'm gone, your Earth will be free to live out its miserable span of existence.
Can anyone stop their mechanical mayhem?
All of my most sensitive areas were inflamed. My extremities pulsating with tingling sensation.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
Swaying back and forth. A beautiful thing taking me away.
You are a robot.
You must listen to Synaptic Sandwich. Saturday nights from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on CITR FM 101.9.
Robot dancing, robot dancing in the night. Basic flash and neon light. You know it's time to move your feet to the metal disco beat.
On Saturday, August 25th, come and celebrate Africa. From noon to 6 p.m., the Canadian Network for International Surgery will hold their annual African Market at 1985 West Broadway. The market is a free and fun community event that will feature Swahili gospel singer Mary Atieno Ominde and more. You'll have a chance to experience traditional African food and culture, and there will be a silent auction held to raise funds for first aid equipment for elementary schools in rural Ethiopia. For information, call 604-739-4708 or go to www.cnis.ca.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Flaming Angels Boutique, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, RX Comics, Temple of the Modern Girl, and the Wallflower Modern Diner.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
Hello, I'm a Mac and I'm a PC.
Did you know UBC Bookstore has the lowest prices on Apple computers in the Lower Mainland? Guaranteed. Buy a Mac, get a $100 gift certificate, and get a free laptop case or lock through to September 21st. You can even trade in your old Mac to upgrade to a new one. See in-store for details. Located at the corner of East Mall and University Boulevard, UBC Bookstore, where your purchases support UBC Campus.
Welcome back to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca. Broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us. It is now time for your provincial and national headlines.
The Government of Canada knowingly displayed quote-unquote wanton and reckless disregard for Indigenous children attending residential schools as day scholars, alleged two BC First Nations in a historic class action lawsuit launched yesterday. If granted permission to proceed, the case, filed in Vancouver Federal Court by Sechelt and Tikemloops Sequepemp First Nations from the interior of BC, will argue that Canada intended to wipe out Aboriginal identity and rights in order to enable, quote, the exploitation of those lands and resources by Canada and demands punitive and aggravated damages, end quote. The lawsuit aims to close a gap in which thousands of daytime students at residential schools, which operate from roughly 1874 until 1996, were denied monetary compensation in the government's 2006 Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement, IRSSA, in the same manner as students residing in the schools. While the so-called day scholars could apply for individual assessment for abuses experienced in school, they were excluded from the common experience compensation for having attended. The federal government insists that the 2006 settlement agreement, which preceded Prime Minister Stephen Harper's formal residential schools apology by 2 years, was fair, and that it was based on negotiations with Aboriginal leadership.
In a historic vote, the United Church of Canada has elected its first openly gay moderator. After 6 ballots and nearly 8 hours of voting at the church's 41st General Council in Ottawa on Thursday, Reverend Gary Patterson emerged from a record field of 15 candidates to win the top job at Canada's largest Protestant church. He is thought to be the first openly gay person to head any mainstream Christian denomination. The 350 voting commissioners at the General Council greeted the announcement with cheers and a prolonged standing ovation and quickly voted to make Patterson's election unanimous. Patterson said, quote, "I am so humbled by the trust and the responsibility you have placed in my hands," end quote. The moderator, who is paid between $119,000 and $135,000 a year, is the presiding officer at meetings of the church's general council and executive, and is viewed as its principal spokesperson. In 1992, the United Church ordains Tim Stevenson, currently a Vancouver City Councillor, as its first openly gay minister. Today, the church boasts many gay and lesbian ministers, and the issue is no longer contentious for most United Church members.
The Bank of Canada purged the image of an Asian-looking woman from its new $100 banknotes after focus groups raised questions about her ethnicity. The original image intended for the reverse of the plastic polymer banknotes, which began circulating last November, showed a so-called Asian-looking woman scientist peering into a microscope. The image, alongside a ball of insulin, was meant to celebrate Canada's medical innovations. But 8 focus groups consulted about the proposed images for the new $5, $10, $20, $50, and $100 banknote series were especially critical of the choice of an Asian for the largest denomination. A 2009 report commissioned by the Bank from the Strategic Council, obtained by the Canadian Press under the Access to Information Act, stated, quote, "Some members had concerns that the researchers appeared to be Asian. Some believe that it presents a stereotype of Asians excelling in technology and or the sciences. Others feel that an Asian should not be the only ethnicity represented on the banknotes. Other ethnicities should also be shown," end quote. A few even went to extremes, saying that the yellow-brown color of the $100 banknote reinforced the perception the woman was Asian and so-called racialized the note. The bank immediately ordered the image redrawn with a neutral ethnicity with light features that appear to be Caucasian. However, both the new image and the original image were designed as composites rather than based on any particular individual. This issue has sparked a debate regarding whether or not the comments made on these panels represent inherent racism in our society, with criticism being thrown at the Bank of Canada for bowing to what many are calling racial pressures.
The long simmering debate about asbestos exports from Quebec to third world countries took a new turn last week during the provincial election campaign. Critics say the toxic substance represents a lethal threat to workers. François Legault, the head of the newly formed Coalition Avenir du Québec, announced on August 11th that if his party formed the next government, it would ban any further asbestos imports. His government would honour the Quebec Liberal government's $58 million loan promised to the Jeffrey mine in the eastern townships, but he said he would urge the company to use it for other purposes. The Quebec Solidaire party had already committed itself to opposing asbestos mining and exports as part of its environmental agenda and welcomed the statement from the CAQ. Parti Québécois leader Pauline Marois, on the other hand, told CBC News that she deplored the loan to the Jeffrey mine but indicated she wasn't ready just yet to ban asbestos mining or exports. The Canadian government came under fire last year for helping to block a move under the UN-sponsored Rotterdam Convention to require that asbestos producers fully inform customers of the health risks entailed in asbestos use. And those are your provincial and national headlines on News 101. It is now time for your science segment, Simply Science by Sarah Chow.
is Simply Science, bringing you your science news. I'm Sarah Chow.
Ah, yes. Imagine yourself wandering through a rainforest in Costa Rica. Relax. Nothing but a sea of green surrounding you. A gentle sound of a bird. The leaves rustling underneath your feet. And then...
Whoa. What was that? Well, you'd never guess. That is the sound of a mouse singing. Yep, you heard right. A singing mouse. And that's the subject of our first bit of news. Because, believe it or not, scientists are actually studying these mice to understand human speech disorders. Sounds crazy, right? Well, here's the connection. These musical mice have a gene called FOXP2, and it's this gene that allows them to sing. And singing allows them to communicate with each other in the rainforest. In humans, the same gene allows us to speak. But researchers have found that mutations in this gene can lead to serious problems. For example, difficulty in understanding grammar, or not being able to make the precise mouth movements you need to speak clearly. So, researchers at the University of Texas are studying the FOXP2 gene in these singing mice to better understand how it works. More precisely, they want to know how the gene turns on, and when it turns on, what else happens? Do other genes in the body turn on? To figure that out, researchers recorded the mice singing, and then they played it back for the mice to hear. Researchers found that when a mouse hears a song from its own species, it activates brain cells containing the FOXP2 gene. So, what does that mean? Well, it means that this gene may play a role in converting the musical information into a chemical signal the body can react to. That's important because if scientists figure out how FOXP2 leads to human speech deficiencies, they may one day be able to prevent this disorder. Ever get grossed out seeing a used Band-Aid floating in a swimming pool? Ew, I sure do. Don't you just wish Band-Aids were strong enough to stick, even when wet? Well, studying how geckos stick to walls could hold the key to designing a synthetic waterproof bandage. Now, scientists already know geckos have teeny tiny hairs on the bottom of their toes to cling onto surfaces. It's just like the way Velcro works. That's why geckos can climb walls and ceilings so easily. But what about wet surfaces? How do they climb them? Researchers at the University of Akron, Ohio compared gecko toe grip when toes were dry and when they were wet on dry, misted, and wet glass surfaces. They then wrapped a mini harness around the gecko to gently pull on them to measure the strength of their grasp. They found when toes were wet, the geckos could barely hang on, regardless of whether the surface was dry or wet. This is because these reptiles have super hydrophobic toes. Yes, it sounds like a superpower they have, but it actually just means their toes repel water. So when wet, little balls of water accumulate underneath their toes, just like water beads on a waterproof jacket. This prevents them from creating a strong contact with the surface. However, when their toes were dry, geckos were able to get a firmer grip on the glass surface. So, researchers concluded that geckos can walk on wet surfaces as long as their feet are dry. But understanding how geckos grip wet surfaces may one day make floating used Band-Aids in pools a thing of the past. And personally, that day can't come any sooner. Now, my last piece of news is dedicated to those of you who still don't believe in climate change. It's because of climate change the Rocky Mountain ground squirrels are in trouble. Researchers at the University of Alberta followed these squirrels for 20 years and found that the late spring snowfalls have delayed them from coming out of hibernation by 10 days. Doesn't seem like a lot of time, does it? But it's a big deal for them. Ground squirrels only have 3 to 4 months to give birth, nurse their young, then eat enough food so they can survive the upcoming winter, which usually lasts for 8 to 9 months. That's not a lot of time. No wonder their population is barely keeping up. The study was published in the journal Nature. So the moral of the story? Don't try telling a ground squirrel there's no such thing as climate change. Well, that's it for this week for Simply Science for CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm Sarah Chow.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. Thank you to Sarah for her Simply Science segment. Always good to have that. We're now going to take a quick break, but please do stay with us for more news.
When when there is no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
The Rio Theater is your independent East Vancouver theater, playing first-run feature films, independent film screenings, as well as live events. Every Friday night, there are featured midnight cult classics on the big screen, and no one can beat the Rio for their cheap date Tuesdays.
Be at the Rio August 17th for Dead On Film, the zombie short film competition where 10 zombie shorts will be shown, but only one will survive. Tickets are $10, doors at 9 p.m. This month at the Rio, your Friday late night movies are Wet Hot American Summer on August 10th, Dumb and Dumber on August 24th, and Dirty Dancing on August 31st. Other attractions at the Rio for August include the world's largest touring circus sideshow, Hell's a Poppin', a sideshow review on August 19th. Extra Vancouver and the Friends of Dorothy series presents a special screening of Mean Girls on August 22nd. And don't miss Dungeons & Dragons, a live comedy experience. Join Vancouver's best comedic performers as they quest for glory and snacks on August 29th.
For more information on all this and more, check out theriotheater.ca.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. It is now time for your international headlines brought to you by Free Speech Radio News.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Three young Russian women were sentenced to 2 years jail time each today after being found guilty of motivating religious hatred. The women, members of the band Pussy Riot, performed what they call a punk prayer song criticizing Vladimir Putin outside a Moscow church earlier this year. FSRN's Karen Percy was outside the Moscow court.
Free Pussy Riot, they chanted. Hundreds of supporters of the women gathered in the streets outside the Moscow court Friday, where the verdict was read. There were hardcore Russian Orthodox churchgoers as well, using song and prayer to show their point of view. Christ is risen, they say. Judge Marina Sirova took almost 3 hours to detail the reasons for the guilty verdict and the jail sentences. She told the women their actions were blasphemous and hurtful to believers. The Pussy Riot song called on the Virgin Mary to get Putin out of Russia and criticised the close ties between the church and the state. The judge dismissed defence claims that it was a political act, saying the band never mentioned Putin or politics during their performance inside the Christ the Saviour Cathedral. The Russian Orthodox Church had pushed for a harsh sentence and welcomed the verdict, but the women's supporters were disappointed.
I think they are not guilty. Verdict is too cruel.
Russia's opposition movement has called the women political prisoners. At least 60 people, mostly Pussy Riot supporters, were detained by police outside the courtroom. Karen Percy, Free Speech Radio News, Moscow.
South African officials now confirm that 34 Marikana miners are dead after police opened fire on a group of striking workers Thursday. Police are defending their actions, according to Reuters, saying officers acted to protect themselves after striking miners with sticks and machetes charged them. Today, media report a group of women held signs and protested the killings. Many are drawing connections between this police action and the crackdowns on black South Africans during apartheid. Thousands of Indians originally from the northeast of the country are fleeing their adopted homes in the south. Rumors have spread quickly among the southern residents that they would be the target of Muslim retaliation. FSRN's Shuria Niazi reports.
Thousands of Northeast India natives began cramming onto trains in Bangalore, Pune and Chennai Wednesday after word spread that a Muslim group had threatened people living in southern cities. The rumor spread like wildfire. It suggested that if people didn't leave before the end of Ramadan, they would face consequences. The concern comes on the heels of tense clashes between ethnic Bodos and Muslims in the northeastern Assam state. Thousands have been displaced and more than 70 people killed in the riots. The threatening messages reportedly spread largely via social media. In response today, the Home Ministry banned mass, multimedia and text messages across the country for 15 days. Shura Niazi, FSRN, India.
A federal judge threw out proposed changes to Florida's voting system late Thursday that would have decreased the number of early voting days in five counties with high African-American populations. Under the Voting Rights Act, the federal government has final jurisdiction over the five counties. The rest of the state's counties will be allowed to have shortened early voting periods. A battle over early voting is also raging in Ohio. Initially, Republican leadership created a system where early voting hours in urban counties would end early, but in Republican-leaning counties, the polls would be allowed to stay open later. Secretary of State John Husted backed off the plans on Wednesday, saying early voting hours would be uniform across the state. But he also said weekend voting would not be available. Bob Fitrakis, an attorney who has worked on Ohio voter suppression cases, says this could have a negative effect on voter turnout.
So he's extended voting hours after work, but not on the weekends when many people voted in 2008 when there were lines out the door.
Fitrakis also says Husted threw out early voting the 3 days before the election for everyone except military personnel. The Obama administration is challenging that change in a lawsuit. Protesters in Portland, Oregon, and Oakland, California occupied Obama campaign offices, demanding the release of Bradley Manning. In Portland, police cited six people who refused to leave the office. In Oakland, things became a bit more heated. Tape captured by an activist shows members of Iraq Veterans Against the War calling for a full pardon for Manning, who allegedly leaked sensitive documents to WikiLeaks. Seconds later, it appears one of the group tried to pass a line of chairs that had been acting as a barrier between staff and the protesters. The protesters then dropped to the floor, staging an impromptu sit-in. According to local media, six of the protesters were eventually arrested for refusing to leave the office. And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
Thank you to Free Speech Radio News for those headlines. We'll be bringing you more international news here on CITR 101.9 FM right after the break.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the UBC Westside area at
The Australian Boot Company, Banyan Books, The Bike Kitchen, The Eatery, Fresh's Best Salsa, Gargoyle's Grill, Gumdrops, Prussian Music, Rufus's Guitar Shop, and the UBC Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
Welcome back to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. We are now going to go to our editorial segment, Hardball with Iqbal, with our guest host, Iqbal Ahmed. Hi, Iqbal.
Hi, CJ. And so today, on today's special edition of Hardball, well, aren't all editions of the special editions, we're going to be talking about Mitt Romney's news this past week of picking Paul Ryan, who's a congressman from Wisconsin, to be his running mate in the November election. And I would actually like to open this up to CJ and Claire and get your guys' thoughts on this issue. And a lot of you might have probably already heard plenty about Paul Ryan, but if you haven't, Paul Ryan is, I believe, a 42-year-old congressman from Wisconsin. This is off the top of my head. He's been serving since 1999. He is a Republican, of course. He's a very staunch fiscal conservative. And if you might remember the budget debate that happened a few months back in the House and Senate, he was the one who came up with the kind of like the Republican alternative budget to the one put forward by the House Democrats. And so probably his defining issue is Medicare reform. And in that budget that came out, his kind of, I wouldn't call it his most novel idea, but the one that came most synonymous with his name was replacing Medicare with a voucher system, mm-hmm. in which it was, my understanding was that it would be a way for people of a certain age, same people served by Medicare, to go to their own doctors, and then the government would kind of subsidize it in a way. I'm not sure about the details, but that was going against a full on insurance policy like Medicare is. And for those of you who might not know what Medicare is, it's kind of old age health insurance in the United States. And yeah. that was his...
Just a few more details on that. I think everyone would be given vouchers up to X amount mm-hmm. of value. And I guess a lot of the debate against that was that it would then be discriminating against people with low incomes and seniors and so on, people who are requiring more medical attention, mm-hmm. in that they may not, the vouchers may not cover the full cost of their medical care, especially if they are with more serious medical conditions or a bit older. Mm-hmm. So there was that's where some of those yeah. discrimination versus efficiency debates came out.
Uh-huh. And so the at least where I want to take this is, it, personally, I was kind of almost, not necessarily confused, but I was very surprised at the pick of Paul Ryan. Not because he's a very intelligent person. He's a very articulate person. He's quite young. He's, I guess, on the campaign trail. He's, like, photogenic, and he's a good speaker, and he'll probably very much appeal to the official conservative base that Romney has been trying to appeal to but has had a bit of trouble because of his past in Massachusetts. And he's also quite popular amongst Tea Party people. Like, I don't know if he'd... He's not a big name in the Tea Party, like maybe Michelle Bachmann or someone, mm-hmm. but I think his credentials as a fiscal conservative very much resonate with that part of the Republican Party. But what I was surprised was that historically, Medicare and health in general has not been the Republican strong suit. Mm-hmm. And for very many reasons, because no one... It's very hard to message on the campaign trail a platform of we're not going to do anything with healthcare, which is what a lot of Republicans want to do, is scale back these healthcare programs and scale back any plan, like have a cut down on the government's involvement with Medicare, with health. And that's very hard to message, so Republicans have shied away from that in their previous campaigns. So I thought it was very interesting to bring in Paul Ryan. I can kind of see it'd be a good like hitting point on Obama's, or like Obamacare, as they call it, mm-hmm. but I think Obamacare already has such negative content in the campaign trail that there are better things for Mitt Romney to focus on.
Well, I think a lot of it, I mean, is it surprising that the debate has refocused here and the question can be brought up about whether or not we think Romney meant to do this? Because it definitely is detracting from his point of view on the economy and jobs, which really was his strong suit. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there's been so much criticism over his own work in Massachusetts with healthcare, yeah. and he has been criticized a lot by that from the Republicans. So I could see it almost being partly intentional there, just bringing in someone with more of that conservative background in the healthcare industry. Yeah. I doubt that they intended for it to refocus in such a harsh way on this issue, but I can understand where he's going with Paul Ryan. And I think the interesting thing with Paul Ryan, especially from the Canadian perspective here, is that very often in the States, especially in the Republican primaries this past year, we definitely saw a lot of focus on the social conservative issues. And I think a lot of Canadians, when they think of Republicans, those are the first things they think of. And so it's interesting to see Paul Ryan. He's another Republican here who's got very fiscal conservative background. But again, those a lot more of those social issues we're not hearing as much about. I think, obviously, he's very pro-life. And he does have some very firm stances, but it's, I think, quite different from, he frames them quite differently than the way many, especially Canadians, think about the Republicans. So he is an interesting choice, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think one area that does concern me a little bit is that I think after Palin was chosen, mm-hmm. you sort of saw the media and the party bounced back against her a bit. A couple weeks after the convention, those criticisms started to flow. And right now, we're like 2 weeks before the convention, and already within a couple of days, there started to be a lot of that backlash. I'm not sure. Maybe that's part of the media cycle turnaround, or...
Yeah, I think it's, in a way, it's a new thing to kind of delve into for the media. There's not going to be nearly the backlash to having Sarah Palin, because Paul Ryan's an established Republican. He has... Mm-hmm. He's been in the national spotlight for such a long time. I mean, everyone was very surprised when he was picked, but it's not someone who's unknown in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And so And it's actually a bit interesting, just the pick of someone from Wisconsin. The danger that many people thought he'd pick an ex-governor like himself, because Romney is running on this big platform of being administrator, having administrative experience, being the governor of Massachusetts, being swept up in like Bain Capital and stuff like that, and to pick someone who is from like the House and the Senate, it kind of opens him up to people's voting history, which, as you see, a lot of the criticism of Paul Ryan has been his past votes in the House and Senate, because he voted to accept a lot of stimulus money for Wisconsin. And so that kind of weakens a bit of the argument against Obama's economic plan, but at the same time, it having Paul Ryan is kind of refocusing the messaging in this race. As a side note, I don't know if any of you guys, because we are on CATS, this might be a little interesting. Paul Ryan gave an interview to, I think it was the New York Times, and he said how Rage Against the Machine was one of his favorite bands. And so Tom Morello wrote an op-ed in Rolling Stone just kind of like calling him out, because, you know, he's one of the most fiscally conservative people in his party, but listening to a band like Rage Against the Machine that is just like so leftist that no Democrat would even go that far.
Don't know. Yeah, that sounds a bit... Maybe he just said it out of the blue and didn't mean it.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Maybe he likes the music and just not the message as much.
Mm. Maybe he didn't interpret the leftist messages.
I think just like the music, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm personally more concerned about his issues, his stance on climate policies and, you know, foreign policies. Like, for example... Like, here are some facts for you straight off of Wikipedia, for example. Like, he is a skeptic of climate change, anthropogenic climate change, which is climate change from human interactions with the environment. He's a skeptic of that. And he opposed the American Clean Energy and Security Act in 2009. And he supports a 10-year, $40 million tax break for the petroleum industry, which is ridiculous because, in my opinion, that industry is the least... is one of the least that needs subsidizing from the government, at least in America.
Yeah, no, I think the... I'll just kind of... Just quid pro quo, like...
Yeah, no problem.
just any opinion on that. With the tax break for the oil companies, I think it was a way to try to promote domestic oil production in America. You know, like, a big Republican issue has always been domestic energy security. I mean, it's been... Let me rephrase that.
Yeah.
It's been petroleum carbon based domestic energy security.
Yeah.
So I think that's almost
But do they feel that retracting the subsidies will make these companies leave America? Because that's not possible.
It would if
their profits are in the multiple billions of dollars.
If it's cheaper to drill in, give me a country, Northern England, right? North Sea oil. If it's cheaper to be in England drilling for oil, people aren't going to go to the Gulf of Mexico, people aren't going to go up to Alaska, and those jobs will not be in America.
But a $40 million tax break in a $10 billion profit is not going to do anything.
But this is an industry-wide tax break, you know? The idea is that, there's so much talk, listen, this is an issue that's kind of calmed down in the last... I'd say like 5-6 years,
yeah.
Especially with expanded Alberta oil and people realizing that our oil isn't all just coming from Saudi Arabia, it's coming from Alberta. America. Americans realizing that oil is coming from within North America, not from overseas. But, you know, in, I'd say, like 9 years after 9/11, the big issue was always, do you know when he gave that tax break?
Nope.
Okay, well, the big issue...
No, he didn't. He just supports that.
Yeah, but the big issue was breaking... Like Bush said, quote, America has an addiction to foreign oil. And so, like that's domestic production.
Yeah, building up domestic production a bit more and, like, stopping foreign alliance and so on.
Mm-hmm. And I had something to say about Paul Ryan.
But why doesn't he, for example, support tax breaks towards solar companies or wind companies.
Also look at what the Republican demographic is. You know, like these green energy initiatives, the green energy companies are not ones that historically back Republican candidates. You know, it's kind of, I mean, it's not, I'm not agree, I'm just give logic behind
true.
The method, right? Like Romney was in Virginia. Virginia's a big swing state right now. It went for Obama in Oregon, I'm pretty sure. and he announced Paul Ryan in Virginia. And what Virginia has, especially West Virginia is a different state, which is very Republican, but actual Virginia has a lot of coal. And Obama had some quote about, I think it was in the last election, that once I'm president, there will be not one more coal-powered power plant in America. And so it is kind of appealing to a base that is historically Republican, you know, right. Traditional industries like that.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, do we want a potential vice president who believes humans have not affected the climate?
I don't think Mitt Romney does. I think if you're asking within the entire Republican field, you might be hard pressed to find candidates who do believe in human caused climate change. And that's the fact of the matter. I mean,
and that's a lot of like the polarization in American politics as well. I mean, you find this enormous divide between these two between these two parties on a lot of these issues, with not too much room for compromise. And I mean, of course, that's the basis for a lot of the problems that we are seeing in the American political system nowadays.
Comment about the climate change. If you, you know, if you follow the debate and the way the climate change debate, even within the Republican Party, has progressed, before it was vehemently opposing any climate change for a good, I'd say almost a decade, and now it's evolved, quote-unquote, to they don't believe in human-caused climate change. So it is like a changing issue within the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Other people might want to know, Paul Ryan is, he calls himself, quote, very, very pro-gun, which gun issues never tend to really come up in presidential races.
Now after all these shootings.
But
I mean, there's no doubt that shootings happen all the time, and we're just not made aware of it. Like, hundreds of people die every day with gun shootings in America. It's just we don't know about it.
But I don't think it's going to become a federal election campaign because...
You mean it's not going to be a question in the presidential debates, for example?
Yeah. I mean, it might be a question, but I don't think it's going to be a big standing point for either of the candidates.
Not the way that, like, Medicare and stuff has blown up to be.
And
he's also very staunchly pro-Israel last time. Like, very, very staunchly. So, I mean, these are all some of the more traditional Republican stances that we're seeing, but I think it's interesting because I think a lot of these things are what critics were calling Romney out for a bit, because he has been criticized as being more of like the changing man. No one really knows his stance on a lot of issues. And I think he's actually done quite a good job here in finding a reputable politician, like someone who is seen as being intelligent with a good background, firm stances, who also does support a lot of these more traditional Republican values that people can really see and that are seen as tangibles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely, I think, anchored what he's doing a bit more firmly in the right, which at the end of the day is probably what he wanted to do.
Definitely. I'm sure like this choice solidified him with the House of Representatives and the Senate Republicans.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say for all like the things you can call Paul Ryan on, they might not agree. I think most of us will agree he could have gone much crazier. there were far more radical Republicans he could have picked. And I'd say if you look at everyone available, this was a very moderate, might not be the right word, but very like temperate sort of choice.
It was a very good tactical choice.
If you wanted a politically tactical good choice, he would have gone with Rubio, Marcus Rubio, who's a Latino, a Cuban American, I believe, and from Florida. Like Obama, a lot of people, you know, it was a Latino vote that like really pushed Obama towards the end, winning key states.
Florida as well.
Yeah, and Florida is the biggest swing state.
Right.
Florida has so many seats in the Electoral College. So once you like, I feel like if you look at the math, Paul Ryan might not have been the smartest choice. When I say math, like look at the Electoral College split up of the different states.
Right.
But if you want to go with, intellectually smart choice might not be the right one.
But, okay.
I'd say he went with someone who's very someone intellectually rooted as a Republican.
Yes.
And not as like a, not a Sarah Palin Republican, not a Mike Huckabee Republican, not a Ron Paul Republican. Just like an old school, like Newt Gingrich, if Newt Gingrich wasn't a horrible person.
Okay.
And that's just my opinion.
But let me ask you a statistical question. Like, statistically, if he had chosen Mark Rubio, are we sure that a lot more Latinos would have voted for him? Like, is that how it works on a statistical level?
No,
like,
I mean, I'm not saying that, but it's a way to resonate with the population, right? When John McCain picked Sarah Palin, like, I mean, he probably already had this vote in the bag, but, you know, let me some colorful language, like crazy suburban mom support for John McCain went through the roof.
Who are very enthusiastic.
Small, very enthusiastic. Small town, like middle America.
Yeah.
Like, Sarah Palin resonated with a lot of people. And do you think if Barack Obama was white,
yeah,
I'm going to choose my words very carefully here. If Barack Obama was white, if Joe Biden talked, acted, same policies as Barack Obama, do you think he would have resonated as much with black voters as Barack Obama did?
African American.
The answer is no.
No. But yeah, that's because he was
enfranchising. He was bringing people into the fold, and I think my point with Michael Rubio was it's a demographic of people that the Republicans have had a lot of trouble courting, yeah. And to have someone that this man would be the second most powerful man in the country, Marco Rubio, he's one of you. It shows that there is a place within the Republican Party for minorities, which has been very difficult for the Republicans for a long time.
Well, then I hope that minorities will understand that. It shouldn't be about the color of the skin that determines whether you vote for somebody, but what they believe
in. And it shouldn't.
Yeah.
But
and I hope they understand that, you know, when they sit down in those Republican meetings and they're talking to these people, yeah, that they say, hey, this is not for me, I'm going for Obama.
I hope people also understand that you shouldn't just vote for Barack Obama because he's a minority.
Yeah.
And being in the United States at that time, I think, amongst young people, I mean, it was a history thing too, like, people want to make history. Yeah. And
I think we were going to wrap up Hardball with Iqbal for today, but we're going to go back to Free Speech Radio News for some more international headlines.
Environmental activists from across the U.S. are mobilizing in opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline, which TransCanada has started building in Texas and Oklahoma. Advocates with the group Tar Sands Blockade dropped banners at construction sites, calling attention to the environmental risks of the project and promising further direct actions in the weeks and months ahead. FSRN's Alice Olstein has more.
Ron Seifert with the Tar Sands Blockade said the campaign to stop the pipeline has brought together groups from the left and the right, including Tea Party members concerned about their property rights and Occupy Houston activists opposed to the environmental impacts of the project.
Well, the pipeline does cross hundreds of waterways in Texas and Oklahoma. It travels right above two major aquifers, one that provides local water for East Texans, and a much larger one, the Carrizo-Wilcox Aquifer, that provides water for the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, as well as a huge swath in the southeast. So we're talking about the drinking water of millions of people.
Last fall, President Obama denied TransCanada a permit to build a cross-border tar sands pipeline from Alberta to refineries on the Texas coast, in part due to concerns about an aquifer in Nebraska. But he approved the portion south of Oklahoma and issued an order in March to expedite construction. Speaking to FSRN from Texas, Seifert said this order has led the Army Corps of Engineers and other agencies to quickly grant construction permits to TransCanada, bypassing the usual environmental impact reviews and public comment periods.
His regulators have more or less just stood down and allowed industry to have their way with local waterways and resources. So this is a huge risk to have all this water nearby and have no investigation, no close look at how the water crossings are going to be handled. That whole process was bypassed.
The Sierra Club and Clean Energy Future Oklahoma are now suing the Army Corps of Engineers, saying their approval of the nearly 500-mile-long pipeline segment violates their duties under the Clean Water Act. They're asking the U.S. District Court in Oklahoma for an injunction on the permit. And activists with the Tar Sands Blockade in Texas say they'll continue to put their bodies on the line in the coming weeks to prevent TransCanada from laying pipeline in the ground, saying every day they delay the project is a victory for the planet. Alice Olstein, FSRN, Washington.
Here's Rob.
And we're going to take a quick break, but please do stay with us. Perhaps? Yes, stay with us. Electro Swing Vancouver celebrates its first birthday with special UK guest, The Correspondents. The Correspondents have floored countless audiences, with The Telegraph UK rating them as their top 10 highlights of Glastonbury Festival 2 years in a row. They will be joined by a live vaudeville band, burlesque, and a fire display for an all-around spectacular night. Retro dress is encouraged. Advance tickets are $15 at escv1yearanniversary.eventbrite.ca or at Woo Vintage. Sponsored by CITR 101.9 FM and So Salacious. And just before we wrap up here on News 101, we've got a bit of non-news but CITR-related stuff to shout out. We're just doing a call-out for local bands, because right now there's two bands from Montreal who are visiting, Sharing, who does art punk, and Kirby Tash's Garage Pop, and looking for one or two local bands to play with them on Monday or Tuesday night at the Zoo Shop. So if you are a local band and you are willing to play a gig on Monday or Tuesday night, if you can send them an email, it's sharingtheband@gmail.com or on Twitter at sharingsharings. S-H-A-R-I-N-G-S-H-A-R-I-N-G-S. So if you're interested in that, do give them a shout. And that's our show for today, which is Friday, August 17th. We didn't give you any weather today. I'm sorry about that, but it is supposed to be beautiful this weekend, so enjoy that. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. So if you'd like to share your comments or get involved or give us an important news tip, you can contact us through our email, news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us on Monday at 5 for another edition of News 101. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Chirag Mahajan. Today's show was produced by Iqbal Ahmed and the entire news team at CITR. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Stranded right here on CITR 101.9 FM.